I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. The air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman, because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crying in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
Welcome to Toward Anarchy. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Michael Storm, and as always, it's terrific. It's my pleasure to be here with you every week and every time, more than just every week. I'm here all the time, not every single day, but most days you can find something for me if you're out there looking for it. At Toward Anarchy is everywhere. If it's on Facebook or X or Instagram, if it's not at Toward Anarchy, it's not me. And of course, you can always follow along at towardanarchy.com. And wherever you are finding the show today, do me a favor, take just a quick moment right now. Do it right now. Click that like button, tap it, smash it, write it into law, get everybody to vote for it, whatever you have to do to get that thing to respond to you. And again, follow along at Toward Anarchy on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. If you're ever in Topeka, Kansas, stop by and see me in the store at Amazing Fantasies and buy a comic book and share in a fantasy world with me. That would be fantastic. If you go to towardanarchy.com, you will find it's episode 2621, and my guest is Dr. Dean Lloyd, and of course, you know the famous Dr. Dean Lloyd. He's been around here for a long, long, long time, almost as long as I have. Facilitator and healer, Dr. Dean Lloyd, evolvingthespecies.com. That's where you can find him at when he's not hanging out here. And if you're so inclined, you can pick up a copy of Cruising the Epiphany Highway, the book by Am Rosen, that we often are working from as something of a playbook. And it will, you would benefit from it, whether we're using it, whether you're following along with us or not. It's just a great read and something that you can look into, something you might look into. Dr. Lloyd, it's always great to have you with me. And it's one of these special occasions. We don't often do a deep dive into planning, or at least I don't anyway. I'm kind of a live by the seat of my pants sort of guy, including when I turn on the microphone. I might have a note or two. I have some of these little fancy note cards that everybody remember, these old school guys.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's something entirely different. It has nothing to do with what's going on here, but I'll have one of those. I'll have one in front of me, even a blank one, just so I can sit here and take some notes if something comes up during the conversation. And I'm imagining today that many, many things of great interest will come up, because we're very targeted in this approach, it sounds like. We've announced it already, talked about it a little bit, let the people know that we're going to do this five-part series about really trying to find some solutions, getting to the heart of the matter. And so I'm excited to kick off the first part of this thing, Dr. Lloyd.
Beautiful. And thank you for that. I'm going to speak to everyone today about approaching heart fulfillment. And this is the first part of a five-part series that I'm going to reveal the first three levels of perception and operating from fourth level of consciousness. Now, what does that all mean? Well, that's what I'm here for. I'm going to explain how it works, under what circumstances it works. I have to explain it, and I will. And with the approach that I'm going to take, I'm going to be doing some stories. I'm going to be talking about experiences that I've had and go over the levels of perception so that we can all relate to how the mind works. This has been my mission. And as you have with your Toward Anarchy project, I see parallels. For example, I'm going to just flat out ask you, why, Michael, do you do what you do?
I don't have anything better to do with my time. No, I do it. It's an exercise in my own understanding and consciousness of what's going on around me and understanding what other people are experiencing. What I do is I tend to approach it from a very simple, I'm not trying to place any preconceived notion over anything I receive, over anything that I'm looking at. It's hard not to. It's very, very hard not to, but I try not to do it. I try to go into it with an open mind, and I just try to relay that sort of experience and that understanding that I think other people experience as well, and maybe help them clarify what they saw, because I see when I'm out there and I'm looking around is I see a lot of people that aren't connected. They're not connected to the world. They're barely connected to themselves and those around them. And so I know that they're disconnected from the world and the news and the reality of the things that are happening. And so it's easy to talk about those things. But then I'm a person, too. And really, first and foremost, I'm a person, and inside my persona, I am all of these various things. I'm a husband and a father and an economist and a drummer and a trumpet player and a comic book shop owner and collector. I'm all these things, and I know all these other people are too, and these things are more important to me than all of that other silly nonsense that's out there. So somewhere in between helping people grasp some understanding of our system and the manipulations and controls that go on, there's this push to get people to value themselves and value what they do for the benefit of what they do and the benefit of themselves and nothing else and nothing more.
Okay, this is where I see the approaching heart fulfillment is complementary to what work you've done in Toward Anarchy. And I'll tell you why. Because when we talked about this in the past about the paradox, is with your Toward Anarchy work, it's is what brings up for people is the fear of losing order. Okay? That's my perception of what you do, is that you're making aware of how they're being controlled, right? And the feeling of going into chaos terrifies people, right? And I want to acknowledge and respect the way that you peel away the lie, okay? This is a big issue for you, is that you keep bringing this, hey, that doesn't make sense. Why are you doing that? You know, you're constantly questioning those things and breaking it down to lead to self-empowerment, because that's really what you're trying to achieve, is this self-empowerment perspective that takes, you know, quite a bit of work to do on your own. I mean, it isn't just, okay, do, you know, take out the garbage and then, you know, you're all done. No. You got to do the work. And that's what I'm going to help people and guide them to help direct how to do that work. And you've done a lot of very good work. And it's impressed me, because the word anarchy scares people. And you're feared because you expose what they, most people anyway, have not worked out for themselves. So I'm submitting that this is the goal of self-mastery. And that, to me, is more important than all these other peripheral issues, you know, we're dealing with. And the government and our society needs to have an upgrade. And by providing you the tools in how to get there, we have to understand what our mechanism is, what our internal mechanism is, how the body works and how we are able to direct our energy in an appropriate way. Because I've said this before, where I to resolve the inner age, that age of inner old conflict, that old conflict that's been weakening people, wrecking people from their self-persecuting havoc, if you will, that the human psyche is in a constant state of destructive conflict direction, right? And that social fabric has been designed so that you can't reach this, you know, level of satisfaction in your life, because it's always got to go through somebody's other authority. It's got to go someone's other, you know, something that we never created. You know, it's what we had been born into, if you will. We inherited this kind of system, right? So you do your job of exposing, okay? And I've got the unmitigated gall to say that this is so I'm going to explain how it works and how that, where the mind is our target here, because you're never going to resolve the problems based on the tools that we were born into. We were given, oh yeah, do what you want in life, but don't you dare feel good about it. Don't you enjoy your life, you know, because we know if you're enjoying your life, because what that'll do is expose what people have not resolved in themselves, right? Are they satisfied with their life? If they are, I like to look at what they do. What is it that makes them happy? Because essentially, we're going to be talking about how we've achieved our level of satisfaction. Because you can have 1,000 dissatisfied people out there, you know, 1,000 dissatisfactions, always complaining, always, you know, directing and pointing the finger, your fault. You did this and you made me, you know, react like that and it was your fault. And, you know, in other words, it's projecting what we haven't resolved. But we're talking about adult souls here. We're talking about growing up. We're talking about advancing our perspective. And I'd like to start out with a story that illustrates this very thing, because it comes to a place where I see patients with all kinds of stories, right? And you see all kinds of people in your store that have their stories, right? Well, what I want to mention is that the what we're going to be talking about is the first three levels of perception first. Okay. And what I'm talking about is the physical sensations. That's the first one. The second one is the feeling responses. And the third one is the conceptual intellect. Now, I'll go into detail, but I want to talk about the physical sensations first. Okay. And what the physical sensations are about is the first level of perception, which is the first level of consciousness. The language of the body, and it's comprised of physical sensations, right? That your purely physical perspective, you know that you are alive because you can see, you can hear, you can touch, you can smell, you can, you know, observe your world around you. And this is the territory of our patterned awareness of the collective unconscious of our species, right? How does that work? Well, first, let me talk to you about when you were a child, and this is where I wanted to get into the story. We were dependent on our parents, everything, right? From the food, staying warm when it's cold outside, any you know, if we have a rattle and a toy, you know, we're playing with it, trying to discover, well, where am I, you know, and who am I? What am I doing here? There was this friend who had and he confided in me by telling me why he was so angry about his life. And he got to a place where he realized that when he was a child, he was in a crib and he was tied to the crib so he wouldn't crawl out. And he remembers being so angry that he couldn't move out of the crib or couldn't move outside because he crawled out of the crib and it was in danger, right? If he was, you know, to get, you know, too close to the stove, or if he was, you know, fall down the steps or something like that. Well, he remembered when he adopted the feeling of being angry at everybody because he was being restricted of his need, physical need to move. He was tied into the carriage and he and the crib, and he was yelling and making all this noise and trying to cause his ruckus, and no one would pay attention to him. Right? That's neglect. And he adopted neglect as the way that he would survive. In other words, he at that physical stage, you have you don't have your intellect developed then, you know, 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old, you're starting to develop, you know, what that's a hand, you know, or that's a bicycle, and you know, that's the door. And in other words, you start to form symbols on your world, right? And you give symbols to identify what they are, and that's your intellect, that which we form into symbols, intellect. So what he was doing was basically physical need. He was hungry, he was cold, he was yelling and screaming to get attention, and nothing was happening. He was ignored. Now, that's a physical trauma to him. He adopted that internally. And he survived. I mean, he, you know, eventually got taken care of, and you know, clothes and eventually had food. But he was at that time needing physical attention that he didn't get. And because of that, it was bred into him to feed that anger. Anger is when you don't know how you feel. And in his case, he was neglected. So he saw the world as being the enemy, right? He was innocent, didn't know what was going on. All he knew was he was physically tired, hungry, and couldn't crawl out of the crib. That's all he knew. That's his physical sensation. Another illustration is that you have an apple and you have three of them, and you pick up one and it tastes so good. The smell, it even looks so beautiful. It's got red with little tinges of yellow in it, and it's got this bright, you know, shiny skin on it, and you take a bite of it and it's wonderful. The second apple you taste doesn't have quite the luster. It doesn't have quite the texture, the tight texture of the other apple, but it's so-so, you know, it's not too terrible. It's not as juicy as the first apple, but it's medium, you know, it's not too bad, but it's not too good either. So that's the first second apple. Then you get the third apple, and the third apple, you bite into it, it's shrivelly and it's yuck, you spit it out, you can't stand it. Okay. That's physical responses, all right? So you've got the three responses of the apple. And in the case of this this child who has no understanding of his world, all he knows is what he feels, right? His physical sensation of being tired, cold, can't crawl out of the crib, being tied and restricted. He has to move, but he can't, all that kind of thing. Those are physical sensations. Now, to the opposite of what my friend was experiencing in the crib, you have a mother who holds the child and keeps her close to her chest, calming him down and realizing that this child doesn't need anything but to be held. That's a physical need that was met. That's what he needed and he didn't get, okay? And so he, because of the patterned conditioning at that early age of physical sensation, he had identified survival with being angry. by, projecting out that the world is his enemy. And so he incorporated that anger as part of his being, right? He would only get what he wanted if he made enough noise or if he was, causing enough disruption. And it wasn't something that was controlled. It was physically, he was having needs that weren't being met there. So the reason I'm talking about the physical sensations is because when we are adopting the physical sensations that, sight, smell, touch, and so forth, what happens to us is we get programmed, all right? We get programmed into what gives us pleasure, what gives us pain. And we work out in our mind the ability, they have these approach avoidance patterns. You approach things that give you pleasure and you avoid things that are painful, right? So in the area of sound, taste, touch, smell, these would impress upon itself on your awareness of how you experience these things. So your nervous system, how does it respond? Well, you might feel a kind of exhilaration by being out in nature, all right? You see the sun is shining, the birds are singing, the sound of the creek, and you're getting that response to the nervous system that everything is okay. You're comfortable, right? But let's say that when you are, you go to the creek and you need to carry some water back home, right? Well, you carry it with a bucket and you do that. You take a bucket of water and you bring it home in your cabin and then, you use it for washing or drinking or washing dishes or whatever. But let's say that you get tired of, taking this this bucket, but all of a sudden you start to, for whatever it's worth, you start to whistle like the birds. And you're whistling just like the birds do, moving along, right? And you start whistling. Maybe you got a song in your head and you start realizing that you're, I wish I was in Dixie, hooray, hooray. In other words, you're carrying this bucket of water and you're singing, and it's making the job of carrying the bucket of water easier by, doing your two-step and singing to the song, okay? Now, every time you go from the cabin to the creek to get the bucket of water and you come back and you're whistling, it makes the job easier, you've developed a pattern, all right? Now, that pattern becomes part of your operation, right? Your ability to work in the world and create an environment that's suitable. Approach avoidance patterns, things you need to do, right? Things that are physically sensations. Say you're hungry and you resolve that hunger by eating the first apple, right? You're satisfied. Now, when you get satisfied, that programmed feeling, physical response to the feeling, the physical response sensation, you're satisfied. What does that do to the body, Michael? It gives you energy. It gives you health. It gives you the ability to move throughout the world. All right. What I'm saying here is that when you are working off the physical sensations feed the body and make it healthy. If you're getting what satisfies you, right? Now, I'm going to switch over a little bit here because you're getting the idea, right? You know that the physical sensations are part of our body's mechanism that we respond to in the world. And when we get those sensations satisfied, guess what? We're healthy. We're not getting sick. We're not in an illness state. And our mind and our body, we're satisfied. That's the direction that we go with the physical sensations. So what do? We look for satisfaction, right? That's in your early developing years, you have to survive in an environment. That means you learn a language. You learn how to survive the area you live in, be it the tropics or in Alaska, you know, in cold climates. You learn to survive based on your experience and finding what gives you pleasure and what to avoid, which causes pain. Now, we're programmable, are we not? Okay. This is why when you find people that are in your world that are in a state of, let's just say, constant complaining, constant, they're not satisfied. They're always finding fault with things. In other words, they're in a state where they're not moving in a direction that's satisfied. They find it easier to complain about or to make the world a less satisfying world by destroying things, by being destructive, right? Where does that come from? Where does that destructive mechanism come from? I want to destroy things. I want to control things. I want to tear things apart. I want to control you. Where does that come from? And I'm going to tell you where that comes from. It comes from a pattern. It comes from a program that is evolving from a decision that is made by the individual, whether or not they want to resolve what it is that gives them this pleasure from the physical sensations or pain. So I want to first take a quick break here and get a little bit of feedback, because what I've just told you is seeming so rudimentary, so simple, that when our physical needs are met and we're satisfied, then we can choose where to put our mind and our energy, right? Because most people are floundering about trying to figure out, you know, how to get free, how to break free of being imprisoned. Where are they imprisoned? Is it their mind? I say it is, because what they really want is freedom of mind, freedom to choose, freedom to pick up one of the three apples, you know, and pick and choose. Oh, I want the good apple, right? But when you get programmed to the place, like my friend who did, who had that anger in him, that was his motivation. That was his charge. He was anger. Anger was his motivation. So he wanted to take it out on the world, right? So everything that was funneled through, he was in conflict with himself. Because he had this feeling that was programmed into him to be angry at the world. But his intellect says that you shouldn't be angry at the world. You should smile at the world. You should be happy. You should enjoy life, you know? So he had this inner conflict of his feeling of anger and fear. It was not just anger, it was fear, because he was afraid he was going to die. He was afraid that he wasn't going to get his needs met, because his physical sensations were so overpowering him that he incorporated those feelings of fear and anger deep into his physical body. But his mind was saying, no, that this is, you need to enjoy your life. You need to be kind to people. But he didn't feel that way. So what I've given you is how most people operate. They're in conflict with their feelings and their thoughts, right? They've got this thought conflict, feeling conflict, and they can't break the pattern. So they work off the physical sensations, right? Hunger, cold, warm, whatever. Then you have the feeling body. That's how you're programmed, right? Whistling Dixie down, you know, picking up the bucket. Programmed response. And the thought form, which is the body forming the intellect, that which we form into symbols, right? Okay, so the thought form of a house, okay, isn't a house. It's a thought. And so if you think house all day, house, 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 and it starts to rain on you, you're not going to be dry. It's because you're just thinking house, you know, nice two bedroom house with a bath, and you know, it's got a nice garden right there and at your window and whatever you've got there. So you can think house, but it isn't. It's a thought form. So what I'm presenting here seems logical, basic, but it is how we operate. Because as long as there's that conflict of feeling and thought form, then you operate off the first three levels of awareness, the physical sensations, the program feeling responses, and the thought form intellect, okay? If you're operating in that form, you never break out of the cycle, because the fourth level of consciousness is the level where you operate from the heart. And the heart, you break the duality, you break the conflict of the feeling response and the thought form. There, and most people that I see, I'd say over 95% of the people that I see have this conflict. So they can't be healthy because they don't feel that they should be healthy. They think they should be healthy, but they don't feel like they should be healthy. And what runs the body, Michael? Feelings. The body works off the feeling responses. So we get this advanced science. We're in this world of advanced technology. And what's keeping us back? The primitive feeling responses that we have not overcome. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. How does that all sound to you so far?
It seems fairly obvious. You said it yourself, and this is something that I run up against a lot of times in any of the conversations that I have, is it seems too easy. Because it is just that easy. And that, of course, is relative to every individual and their abilities and their want and their needs, et cetera. But the fact is that when we say it's just as easy as doing some of these things, it is that. It just think about what you're implying, and I know this to be a real thing, with that young sort of development and that very early age development, particularly when it comes to trauma, because I'm one of those people that learned at a young age that the people that are supposed to care for you and love you and watch after you will sometimes be the ones that are going to hurt you. And it's a good lesson to learn, I think, for most people, but maybe you don't want to learn it at the sort of age of 7 or 8 or something like that. But it is fact that at these younger ages, the more traumatic these things are, the more likely they are to stick with you. And that's just crazy, being sort of tied to a bed and just trapped and stuck in a place like that, in a crib, and knowing that it's a crib and knowing that it's back, that it goes back that far. But also understand that we were kept in cribs a lot longer back in the day too. I still remember some crib time myself. I sucked on my middle fingers when I was very young. It didn't go into my young years, development year. It was early on, and I know that they would put Tabasco sauce on my fingers to keep me from talking. Yeah, and it was traumatic. So I very specifically remember sort of putting my fingers in my mouth and the Tabasco sauce burning me, and my mother telling me that that's what was happening, and picturing it from being inside the crib. I wasn't on a bed. I wasn't, I wasn't on the couch or something like that. I was in a crib. And so they're definitely traumatic things like that that stick out to you when you're a child. So these other things should be a no-brainer, and that's what I was getting at. It should seem very simple that what you perceive physically in pleasure and pain, you're going to chase the pleasure over the pain, and that is part of a programming process, and that you learn, and that's why you whistle while you work, because you learn that it eases the process of working and the pain of working, and it makes makes the time go a little bit faster and your brain is doing something other than concentrating on Jesus Christ, I want to get done with this work because it sucks. It's just so simple. It's brilliantly simple.
Yeah,
and that's part of the problem in communicating some of these ideas that people are told that it's not that easy, that life is hard, that if you're not experiencing pain, then you're not experiencing life, that if you're not, you know, there's all these sort of weird cliches about how we're supposed to suffer through life instead of just enjoy it.
And I would like that phrase, brilliantly simple. I'm going to borrow that. And I'm going to also mention that this is a lifelong process to deprogram yourself. We are constantly facing those inner challenges until you break free and make it your own. So this is a good time to bring up the three stages of learning, right? You make a discovery. All right. I've just said something to everybody that if it resonates with you, makes sense to you, then you've made a discovery, right? It's okay. There's the feeling responses of the thought forms. Okay. That makes sense. Then there's the mechanical stage. What is the mechanical stage? It's making it part of you, mechanism, the way of integrating what you've discovered. And whenever you go through that, you go through it so that your body adjusts, your nervous system becomes acclimated to the new information, right? How to ride a bicycle is one of the most common examples, right? You look at it, you see the mechanism there, there's the pedals there, you sit on the seat, and you got these handles to steer, but your body doesn't know how to operate that till you get on the thing, and then you start to operate it. Okay, well, you move your body forward by pushing down, and you somehow have to make it so you're not going to tip over and balance yourself, right? And you're going to use your you're going to use your hands to also help prop you up and steer the direction you're going. Well, when you first do it, your body doesn't know what to do. It's just,
and then 5 minutes later, you're doing it hands free.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So you've got the mechanical part of you that says, okay, well, it's supposed to operate like this. I'm supposed to move like this. And so you formulate in your mind how to operate this contraption and move on the bicycle, right? So that's the mechanical stage, is that you're operating the muscles and your sight and you're feeling the grips and all of the things that you need to get the sensation of how to operate the bicycle, right? That's the mechanical stage. And then when you've got it, you can ride the bike. That becomes the integration. That's when you put your signature on it. Maybe you decide to get so good at it, you don't need to, have your hands on the, you can do it hands-free, right? Or you can do, you know, go bicycle right up the ramp and right down the, you know, do a loop or whatever, you know, the bicycle tricks are, right? So you can put your own creative part to making it your own once you operate the bicycle. Same thing goes for the mind. If you know how the mind works, whenever you get, and you've heard me say this a lot, but it needs to be repeated, and that is when you get the negative emotion, fear, doubt, or confusion, something you don't understand, anger, anxiety, guilt, shame, the more emotional you are, the less you feel. What an interesting concept, right? Feeling responses in motion are emotions. And I'm at the stage where if I don't want to be emotional, I won't. But if something is making it so I get a hug from a friend, I enjoy them, and I allow myself to open up, I can allow that feeling to emote. I can allow that emotion, feeling in motion, to operate within me and be in that true experience where I find so much of what is going on with our world is a world of denial of our true understanding. We insist we understand when we really don't, and then you become controlled by your ignorance. And that's what's controlling people. Right now, people are so confused. They're because they're being controlled and they don't have the tools to understand what the mechanism is that's within them to break out of where they're being controlled. So they point the finger. It's you. You're the one that's causing me to be controlled. You're the one that lied to me. You're the one that made me feel so unhappy. Do you see what happens? We have a layering, a progression, an ability to, if we're able to understand this process, which I'm going to share in the second session on how to deal with fear, but you're going to understand, I'm going to give you the tools on how to catch yourself from falling into the trap of being controlled, because no one can fool you. The worst that they can do is give you the tools to fool yourself. And I know that this is a big part of what you do, because what you notice in people is just how many people out there really relate to you and can get it and understand what you're trying to achieve is you're trying to break the pattern of being controlled. That's why you call it toward anarchy, because essentially what we're talking about is being controlled by an authority figure that does not understand, because if they did, they would never use fear, doubt, confusion, any of the negative emotional patterns to teach you, to make you powerful, to strengthen you, to give you what you need to be satisfied. Because when you're in your own power, you can pick it up, put it down at will. You could pick up the glass of water. You could put it down. You could, you know, go outside if you want or come back inside if you want. That's true power, is the ability to move in and out of spaces. But to get there, we have to get through all of the blocks that prevented us from moving through the space freely, right? Through the space so that you can choose what energy you want to play with. Use it, right? When you have the energy, I like to play. You're a drummer. You love to play. I love to play my bass, and I love to sing. And those are energies that give me satisfaction, pleasure, creativity. I love to swim. I love to hike. These are things that I do. I can't do everything I want, I will admit. I'm not there yet. I'm working on it. But this is why we are evolving into a new state of mind that takes us away from fear-based systems. And that includes the medical system. Our medical system is fear-based. And I've had people, when I tell them what I see is wrong and what needs to be done, they get so mad at me. I had one young girl. I wouldn't say young girl. She's in her 20s. She was a young developing woman, and she was coming to me for headaches and treatment of headaches. And I looked at her pulse, and I did my Chinese diagnosis. And sure enough, there was a problem that she did not know about that I mentioned to her, and it was her navel ring. The navel rings that they wear on their belly button, you know, she had a piercing there. Now, we discovered, and I had to tell her, because it's my job to reveal this, right? Because I have the knowledge that in Chinese medicine, there's a meridian that goes straight up your front called the conception vessel, and it goes all the way up and it stops. It comes all the way to the head, okay, to the top of the head, right? The conception vessel goes all the way up. It's called Renmo, but the energy goes up. And what was happening with her, and we found this statistically back in the early 2000s, that the rings cause a block, and the metal in the body interrupts the chi or energy that goes up the front vessel, the conception vessel, and it affects the opposite part of their body the most energetically. So what's the opposite of the navel is the top of the head. And where was she having headaches? Top of the head. We call it Jue Yin. But these we have the top of the head pain. And I said to her, if I was to ask you to take out your navel ring and I was to treat you for the block of energy at the top of your head, would you do it? And she never was even considering that as a possibility. Wasn't even in her world that that was even related. Because everything that she was brought up with, they never said anything about that. There's no side effects to this. You know, you'll feel a pinch when you get it, right? You get the piercing, but it's not going to affect your physical body. That's crazy. Well, society adopts something that's incorrect or something that doesn't work, or you don't get all the pieces put together, and they buy into it. So the society just, you know, muddles along with this, you know, ignorance. And so I said to her, I'll take out the navel. If you take out the navel ring, then I'll treat you. And at that point, I saw a look on her face that it was just a reaction that said, you are absolutely out of your mind, crazy. How could you even think that? But to be open just for a split second, and I could see that she was thinking about it. If she were open for just a split second, that gave me a window to work with her. 2 weeks later, she calls me. She calls me. It took her 2 weeks. She said, Dr. Dean, I took out the navel ring a couple days ago. And my headaches, they're better. I'm not feeling the pain that I had before. But I'm a little concerned. And she came in to see me, and I looked at her and I did some treatment on her and relaxed her. And she started to weep. She started to get just tearing up. And it was the pain releasing from her head, but her ability to release the emotional attachment to something that she had to look cool, you know. I had to have this, you know, I'm different. When I wear my bathing suit, I'm going to show off my navel ring, you know, kind of thing. And she had an emotional release. And I held the space for her, because that's what I do for people. And when she got through it, she didn't even have the desire to wear it. It wasn't even needed. It wasn't part of, but she was so indoctrinated, so much of an impression on her that she had to look a certain way, and she wanted to look different than everybody, right? And have this kind of, you know, I'm cool and I'm sexy and, you know, look at me and I, that kind of thing. But she took her 2 weeks to come to back to me, but she did it. And I hardly had to do anything else after that, because you can't make physical changes in the body without making emotional releases. It's a fact. It's the way we operate. We are physically connected to our world, as I mentioned, how we are, our sensations, touch, you know, the smells, hearing, everything in our world. But the programmed response of how we should look, how we should act, under what circumstances will make us acceptable in a society, as dysfunctional as it is, how do we operate to survive? And she felt like this was part of what she needed. But when I had that opening, Michael, for just a second or two, that changed everything for her. And even though it took some time for her to process that, she made a decision that empowered her. And I was able to help after that.
Those are some of my favorite experiences, the literal sort of planting of the seed. You that's what you did. This woman came in, she had an issue. You said, hey, there's this thing you got going on, could be the issue. I don't know, you might want to let me know about that. She thought about it for a while. She came back after fixing the problem herself. Hey, look, I did this. I did what you said, and I feel better now. And yeah, those are my favorite. It was the thing that happened all the time. We were street activists back in 2011, 2012, Occupy, that sort of thing. We handed out thousands and thousands of CDs and DVDs all over Colorado, and it would be one of these things where we would give, something to somebody, and then 6 months later they'd show up and they'd be like, you know what? I had that disc. You guys gave that to me. I saw you down here on 16th Street Mall, and you guys were doing a little bit of cosplay and having some fun and talking about the bankers, and you gave me this DVD, and it just sat around for a while, but I was bored one day. I threw it in there, and I went, it blew my mind, and they show back, it's that literal planting of the seed that so somebody learns, they don't just have to take somebody else's advice, and they can trust themselves a little bit. They learn to trust themselves a little bit in their instincts and learn to trust other people. It's pretty a fantastic thing, really.
Yeah, well, you change by way of realizing what works and what doesn't by exploring experimentation. If someone says to me, that looks interesting, I want to try that just to see where it takes me, I say no problem with that, right? If you want to wear a navel ring and see where it takes you, that's fine. But if you know that...
You'll probably be fine.
It's not just the navel ring, isn't it? It's symbolism. Right.
Yeah. Right. And do what you do. Do it to yourself. Make your decisions. Realize that certain decisions have consequences.
But see, this is why we haven't been clear in the medical field on where dangers lie, because it's always about the fear being the driving force and taking your power away. In the older days, in the 50s. There were some really fine doctors that I admired. Patch Adams was one of them. I thought he was quite the guy, because he stood up, he made people laugh, he had the mind, the presence that allowed people to relax. But when I'm around people that are uptight, boy, do I irk them. Because I reveal, I can see what they're doing, and they're afraid of me. And because when I call them out, if I do, I pay attention to what they're doing and why they're stealing energy from this person or that person, or trying. I see the manipulation that goes on with people that know how to take energy from people. Manipulation isn't a bad word, right? It's just a matter of moving energy, right? But how they use their weaknesses against them instead of bringing them up, okay? And this comes up with your Toward Anarchy show a lot, okay? I've noticed that you present what would be obvious a lack of empowerment in people to take the initiative of choosing to not go in the direction that's feeding their demise. You constantly bring that up. And when you do, you have to replace it with something that's more appropriate, adequate, and effective. And that's why it's a gradual, it's a process. And I mentioned this earlier. It's a way of graduating. It's a way of moving into a place. When you have control of something, when you write your signature on it like you have with your work, you can position it in ways that are most effective in operating in the world that you operate. Whether it be through your comic book shop, through your family, it's part of you. It's integrated. It doesn't matter what you do in life. I could sweep floors for a living. I think it'd be a terrible waste, frankly, but I could. but it's my state of mind that puts me in a place of choosing where I put my energy, which then becomes open to all kinds of beautiful things that you make available for yourself, be it exercising, like I mentioned, is swimming, be it playing music. And yeah, we got to take care of the bills and we got to take care of the, you know, the minutiae around the house, you know, doing whatever, fix your car and come on kind of thing. But what is going on is that you are operating from a place of self-awareness. And in the next show, I'm going to help everybody realize how to deal with fear. Fear is when you don't understand and how we overcome it. And I'll be focusing on the second level of perception. And I love questions, you know, Michael. So if you could let your audience know on your show when you're doing that, that I'm here for them, and that if they send me an email, AccuTone1, A-C-U-T-O-N-E, number1@yahoo.com, put in the title Toward Anarchy, okay, in the subject title Toward Anarchy, so I'll know that it's from them and they have a question about what we're offering them, okay?
Very cool. I like a little bit about audience participation myself. I'm looking forward to the next part, because talking about the fear factor, if you will, it's such a big part of it all. It's how everything operates in our world. You already mentioned that it's how the medical system operates. It's how our political system operates. It's how our social system operates. It's fear of being not a part of it, being left behind, not being as good as everybody. It's fear of everything. And fear is a great motivator, true, but it's very limiting. It's a very limiting motivator. It only goes just so far, and then you've damaged people. It seems, and then it's harder to get them to learn without fear, without that being a driving factor. They get lackadaisical, I guess would be a good way to put it. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I think we got a great start on the whole thing. That's for sure.
Excellent. All right. Well, like I say, I love questions, and if you send me the email, then I'll look at them and bring it up in the next part. But I need to lay the foundation for the second level of perception to overcome fear, because if fear is driving the ship, we're never going to get out of this mess.
Well, the whole conversation is about self-mastery, and you can't be in fear of mastering yourself. You know, it's about that ownership, and I don't mean ownership in like, you bought it, you own it, it's in managing it. That's the part of ownership is that's important. It's the responsibility, it's the work that you put into it. Always a pleasure, my friend, Dr. Dean Lloyd, evolvingthespecies.com, and support Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. Visit shoprbn.com for the win-win. And everybody, we will catch up with you next time.
Thank you, Michael.
You lack imagination, Destro. We possess the ultimate weapon of control. People trust television. It's their friend. They believe what television tells them about the news, the weather. Don't you see? We control the creation of truth.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network.